no radio communication for 40 minutes. I couldn't imagine what that would be like as they're bringing Senator Jacobson. That'd be kind of weird.
Yes, that would be weird.
Yeah.
When you're all cooped up, that I couldn't take sitting in a confined space like that. That would just drive me nuts.
Yeah, and then if the toileting ain't working, then that adds that's a lot of complication that you didn't nobody asked for.
Well, with my new grandson, I'm starting to understand what diapers are all about.
Yes.
So.
I wonder if that's their backup. You know, just wear diapers. At any rate.
Yes, that would be kind of a problem after the first couple of days.
I don't know if that's a good segue into what you had to put up with down there in Lincoln sometimes or not. But.
Actually, it probably is a pretty good comparison.
Things are winding down. We're getting down to the last few days where bills that haven't made it past first round, they go away, as you were mentioning to me before we came on here, and we're getting down to basically the priority bills, and we want to talk about the bill that got a lot of attention here lately, 1187. You stepped in, and it looks like you did a lot of the work on this brand bill to get it through and get it to the point where it can go through. And just tell us about what you did to kind of make this work and get enough people on board to get it to this point.
Well, I wouldn't say I did all the work. I think my part was really trying to get the parties together, really kind of understand what the bottom line was for each party and figure out whether that's attainable. You know, I think this all kind of began a year ago with LB 646 that Senator Ibaugh brought, which really opened up this issue. Her bill 646 would basically have eliminated, would have taken the registered feed yards completely out of brand inspections. So they would be located within a brand inspection area, but they wouldn't be subject to any audits, any fees, any inspections. They would just operate totally independent, which, if you look at the integrity of the brand inspection system, it'd be really hard to allow cattle to come in and out of the brand inspection area and then have, if you will, a sanctuary city that they could go to. And meanwhile, everyone else would be subject to brand inspection. So
right.
I think that's where really the fight kind of began. And in terms of how do we ensure that anyone inside the brand inspection area would be subject to audit, they'd be subject to inspection, mm-hmm. which really comes down to confirming ownership. And we talk about brand. Your cattle do not have to be branded, but you have to be able to prove ownership. And a brand from the beginning of time is used for proving ownership. You brand your cattle. If my brand is on that animal, it's mine. Then as we start selling those animals, then they've got to have accompanying paperwork to be able to prove that I bought this particular animal from the person who owns the brand and they sold it to me. And if I'm going to sell it to another party, I've got to have paperwork. And it's all got to trace back.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really what brand inspection's all about. If someone brings cattle into the area that's never been branded, then I have to have the proper paperwork to know where it came from, bill of sale, so on. The statutes are pretty clear. They outline what proof of ownership is and what constitutes proof of ownership, what can be used for proof of ownership. And that has not changed. It has not changed now. In this final bill that will pass, it has not changed what constitutes proof of ownership. So I would say that really the work I did was really trying to get the parties together and bridge the gap. I tried to do that a year ago, and we weren't able quite to get to the finish line. This year, we really had another bill that came out that was brought really by Senator Hansen, and that bill was LB 1258. Mm-hmm. And LB 1258 did a lot of the same of what LB 646 did. It kind of kept them in, but it allowed for brand to be voluntary. It provided for complete elimination of the brand committee. That, too, was a very radical bill. And actually, I would say Senator Hansen's bill really went further than LB 646 did the year before. Mm-hmm. I kind of argued that if you didn't like 646, you're going to hate 1258 to the point to where you're going to say, if only we could have 646, it wouldn't be so bad. That bill, of course, hit the same resistance, really led by Senator Storr, who is a cattle rancher, and she has been on the brand committee, has certainly posed the issues inside and out. And she and I have worked together really since last year on trying to get a resolution. I know a lot of people have asked the question, well, why did we have to pass anything? Well, because if you've noticed, there's a trend here. We're getting a bill every year, and every year the bill seems to go further. So the reason for getting a deal is we need to work out what can everybody live with. And then let's pass that bill, and then let's live with it, okay? Uh-huh. And I think that was really the push. I know some people have said, well, this is the first of many steps. I hope not. And as that's certainly not the intention. We're expecting that this bill, I guess I would pity the person who brings a brand bill next year, because that's going to be hit from by a brick wall. So I believe that we have really, other than just minor tweaks, there will be no more wholesale changes in brand anytime soon. Now, mm-hmm. I would tell you that the bill that's going to move forward was introduced by Senator DeKay, who chairs the Ag Committee, and that would be LB 1187. So there was a hearing on LB 1258. There was tremendous participation by constituents in my district and Senator Storr's district who adamantly opposed it. And then there was another hearing held for LB 1187. LB 1187 was just a bill to be able to allow changes in the fee structure. And what was going to happen if LB 1258 passed, there would be so many people exempted that there really wouldn't be the dollars to be able to support the brand committee's operations. So 1187 allowed for the fees to go higher, with the cap to go up. The brand committee would have to change the fees, but the legislature would have to be able to raise the cap on what those fees could be. So it became the vehicle for what we ultimately changed. LB 1187 had a couple of amendments that were added to it or brought that were committee amendments to further change what the bill did. But ultimately, the amendment that I introduced was was AM 3037. AM stands for amendment, and so it was a floor amendment to amend LB 1187, eliminating whatever the other amendments brought, and what 1187 brought. So AM 3037 to LB 1187 is the bill. So LB 1187 now has all of the words from AM 3037, and that is the bill itself. So it did pass first round approval, 37 to 1, with 7 senators present not voting. So with 37 votes, you need 33 to break the filibuster. So I believe that the bill has good momentum. There were people that were not on the floor, so there would have been some absent senators as well. But I believe that we now have a bill that has reached a consensus that the legislative body was waiting for Senator Storr and I to get on board with some bill. Mm-hmm. And this is the terms under AM 3037 brought the necessary changes that we could be comfortable. Make no mistake about it. Senator Storr and I aren't wild about all the provisions in AM 3037, but we believe it accomplished everything that we set out to accomplish, which was preserve the brand committee, preserve the integrity of the brand, and be able to provide the funding necessary for the committee to carry out its actions. It would still be an independent agency. It would not be part of the Department of Agriculture. It would still operate independently as it does today. There is a provision in there, and I know this is confusing. I wouldn't say I've received emails myself reading online, which, of course, anything you read online, you know is true. Okay, I have been reading some online comments that are off base, that don't understand quite how this worked. They're taking provisions out of the amendments that my AM 37 replaces and thinking that's going to be part of the law. It's not. So there was one of the amendments that to LB 1187 would have increased the brand committee from the 5-person committee it is today to a 9-person committee, and it would have brought in, it would have specifically mandated a couple of more feedlot people. It would have mandated a purebred producer. It would have mandated that there would be a sale barn operator and someone outside the brand inspection area. AM 3037 only expands the membership by 2, so it goes from 5 to 7. Uh-huh. And it does not mandate that there be, it would mandate that there would be at least one feedlot, which is who, there's a feedlot representative on there today. But it leaves it open in terms of the intent would be that there would be at least as many cow-calf producers on the board, and likely there would be a more cow-calf producers. When you really look at brand, and I know that's where some of the frustrations have boiled over time, is the reason the push was there before to eliminate feedlots from brand inspection is because brand was really designed to protect cow-calf producers. People ask, why was the line drawn and why isn't the entire state in brand inspection? Well, the reason for it is that there's a diagonal line that takes roughly a third of the state, the eastern third of the state, out of brand inspection, because years ago, that's where predominantly the feed yards were located, and the cow-calf producers were west, where the grass was at, mm-hmm. The sand hills and other grass areas. Over time, feedlots have moved west into the brand inspection area. Their argument is nobody's stealing cattle out of feed yards, okay? Uh-huh. They're pinned up, they're lighted, it's got a double pin system, there's people there. If you're going to steal cattle out of a registered feed yard, you're a pretty bold individual with a death wish, okay? So if you really look at the cow-calf producers, and it's hard for people in the eastern part of the state to even imagine what the Nebraska sandhills are all about, and how big this area is, how big these ranches are, mm-hmm. and how the risk of stolen cattle exists for a number of reasons. So the brand inspection is really to protect cow-calf producers predominantly. And so there's a lot of people that believe, well, then why don't they pay for it? Well, the way the new bill will work is that the fees for registered feed yards will go down significantly. But they will still be paying a fee. They still will be subject to audit, and they will still be subject to inspections. And that was the goal in mind, is that we've got to be able to know about the cattle that are going in and out of the registered feed yards. One of the bills also would have exempted dairy development, which is kind of a fairly new thing in feed yards, where there are literally dairy calves from Wisconsin and from California and other states that get brought into Nebraska, and they come in as young calves, and they get grown out, fed up, taught how to use stanchions, and then when they're 18 months, 2 years old, they're sent back home to become milking dairy cows.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's called dairy heifer development. But these are feed yards. They could put beef animals in them, and then you're also starting to see some crosses between beef and dairy cattle that are being fed. And so our concern was, and Tanya and I talked about this, and her store talked about this a lot, that it's very difficult to start exempting people out. Then where does it stop? So our view was milking dairy cows should be exempt. They've got their own inspection system. Those cattle are all, they have their own traceability, and they come in to be milked. But when it comes to heifer development and anything that looks like a feed yard, if they're in a brand inspection area, they need to be part of the brand inspection. So ultimately, that's what's in the bill, and we believe that that closed the final loop that we had concerns about. So I believe that the bill that will be passed is really, should, if people really study it over, I think they're going to find that they got what they needed. Feed yards got a significant reduction in fees, and we cut the number of inspections or number of audits in half. Cow-calf producers got to keep the integrity of the brand inspection system, and they know that everyone in the brand inspection area will continue to be inspected and audited, and so it solves what they wanted. They may at some point have to pay a slightly higher fee, but it will not be substantially higher because that we did make a change in what you could charge for brand renewal, meaning you renew your license for your registered brand. And I think today it's $25 a year. That's going to move to $100 a year. Believe it or not, there's 33,000 brands,
yeah,
registered brands. So at 33,000, and you move the price up on the renewal fee, that more than replaces the income that would be lost from Tyson closing and from the fee reductions that occurred with the registered feed yard. So we do not believe that there will be a revenue problem for the brand committee, and we believe that they can carry out what they need to carry out with the fee structure, and we believe we protected the integrity of brand. And so at the end of the day, it's not a perfect bill, but it's as good a bill as I think we could possibly get passed through the Nebraska legislature, and all parties seem willing to accept this compromise.
Okay, has that moved to final reading, or we got a second round yet?
We're moving to second round, so I would expect second round debate likely to happen on Wednesday. Then there'd be a layover day, and then there'd be final reading. So,
okay.
So it should be up this week for two rounds of debate, and we'd be done.
Okay, your ag data privacy bill, that's awaiting final reading, and that should happen this week, right?
Yes, it will, and see no. No speed bumps here at all. That should just sail through. I'd have to say a year ago when I introduced that bill, it was hard to find anybody that supported it. I made some substantial adjustments to the bill, and now it's hard to find somebody that opposes it. So big turnaround. I think the key to being successful in the Nebraska legislature is you've got to listen. You've got to be responsive. You've got to be able to understand where the objections are, fix the objections, and still bring a bill that makes sense. And ag data privacy was one of those classic ones to where you got to start out smaller and bring something that everyone can kind of coalesce around. And that's kind of been my process when it comes to bringing bills and passing bills. My track record's been pretty good because that's the way I approach getting legislation passed, is try to find what people are wanting, listen to what the concerns are of the opposition, and solve those objections.
Saw something, too, on the Unicameral Update website about alcohol medical cannabis regulations being approved last week. Structure for implementation of medical cannabis regulations given final approval. That's LB 1235. Any comment on that one?
Well, yeah, I would just say that there are a lot of people out there saying that that the legislature did not respect the vote of the people by not passing the bill last year that was brought by Senator Hansen. Well, the fact of the matter is the legislature did exactly what the petition initiative asked for. Is it asked for regulations and the ability to purchase certain quantities of cannabis. And that is law. That has become law. But what we didn't pass was Senator Hansen's bill, which essentially legalized recreational marijuana. And so I was opposed to that, as were the majority of the legislature, that if you want medical cannabis, fine. Then medical cannabis was voted on and the regulations have been put in place. The governor's put the commission together. We've done everything that was required. They're confused by the fact that there was also a recreational cannabis bill that was introduced under the guise of medical cannabis, and that failed. Mm-hmm. So that's what I think people need to understand. Of read what was in the ballot initiative and look at what got done, and you'll find that we implemented what had to be implemented through the ballot initiative. We did not change that. But I would also say there's always minor changes that have to happen in any ballot initiative, because they're not statutes, they're ballot initiatives, and they leave a lot of details out, which is, of course, the same thing that happened with a minimum wage. We do have a $15 minimum wage.
Uh-huh.
That is law. That is law, $15 minimum wage. Uh-huh. What the legislature did was modified the minimum wage for those under the age of 16 who don't have a driver's license, who can't lift more than 50 pounds by law, who are limited on the number of hours they can work, and basically are youth. So if you're going to require them to be paid the same minimum wage as adults or those over age 16, then those under age 16 who can't drive, they're going to have a hard time finding a job. So they basically could be paid $13.50 an hour, and there would be an opportunity for employers, particularly rural employers with small businesses, can better afford to pay a high school kid, for example, who's going to help them do certain things around their business, and they're paying $13.50 as opposed to $15. I doubt very few people considered that when they went to the ballot box and voted for the minimum wage. So the fact is, we do have a $15 minimum wage. The legislature did not change that, but we made an accommodation, I believe, for younger people, so that they can have an opportunity to get a job, get that first job, and be paid the training wage. And I think that will be a good tweak, and I think we'll look back and say it was really good that we made that change.
All right. Do you expect there's going to be any big, I don't know if you call it a filibuster, any big debates on some of the legislation that's going to be in final reading this week?
I don't. Usually when you get to final reading, it's had two rounds of debate. Everyone knows where the votes are. And unless you filibustered it before and it just barely got the votes and you maybe were getting somebody to change their vote to where you could kill it, that could possibly be. But usually by the time you get to final reading, we move pretty rapid fire. And one thing I think your listeners would probably want to know is I get a lot of questions about present not voting, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I, if you want to get somebody's blood pressure up, go in and say, this person voted present not voting, and they're saying, well, you're not doing your job. We sent you down there to make votes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's true. But let me tell you that on final reading, we decided a year ago, 2 years ago, I think, when we made rule changes that said you're not eligible, you cannot vote present not voting. If you're present, you must vote yes or no on final reading only, okay?
Yeah.
Yeah, because the present not voting, there are a long, long laundry list of reasons someone would vote present not voting, okay? It could be as simple as going out in the lobby and meeting with a constituent or a lobbyist, and a vote takes place while you're out in the lobby, okay, out in the rotunda.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you're checked in, so you're technically present, but you missed the vote,
mm-hmm.
So you're present not voting. There was a picture in the paper or paper on the, that's been out on the web, I think, with Commissioner Wooler and I in the rotunda speaking with each other. There were two votes that took place while we were visiting out there, and I told her, hey, you need to take a picture of this because anybody questioning why I was present not voting, it's because I'm out here talking to you. but the votes were votes that were not consequential. When it comes to final reading, that's when that bill becomes law, and that's the last round. So it is important that you be there, so you need to be present, and they put up ceremonially, but they do put a kind of a theater rope across the end of the aisles in the legislature, reminding senators you should be in your seat and you can't leave the area.
Uh-huh.
So the only reason you could leave during final reading is to go to the restroom, and you better make that pretty short because you can't miss the vote. They're going to wait for you to come back to make the vote. Final reading goes very quickly because the clerk reads the title of the bill, and then you vote, and it works pretty quickly. Usually there's very little, if any, debate on final reading. You could still filibuster the bill for 2 hours. So every now and then on a controversial bill, it will get filibustered all three rounds of debate. But generally, final reading goes very, very quickly. And anybody that watches it on Friday will see that it's pretty rapid fire.
All right. People like to get a hold of you, they can call the office there or send you an email.
Yeah, absolutely, and Christina is always happy to take your call. 402-471-2729 is the phone number, or M. Jacobson with an O at leg.ne.gov is the email address. I'd love to hear from you. And I think that I get a lot of calls that can, even when things are live on the floor. I've had people that have been texting me on my cell phone. There are several who have my personal cell phone number. So I get from Jane Davis, the superintendent of Percy Public Schools, texts me pretty regularly. I get texts from county commissioners, from school board members, a lot of people that stay in touch with me. And literally there's a vote coming up on the floor and they're texting me about, here's my concern with this, and I meant to mention this to you before, and it has influenced how I vote because they're getting me the latest information. So I do respond to constituents, and that's who I work for. I understand that, and I appreciate getting that communication.
All right, Mike, thanks a lot. As always, look forward to, what are we looking at? Will Friday be the last day then?
Well, actually, it'll be Friday will be day 59.
Okay.
And day 60 will be a week from Friday.
Okay.
And the reason it's a week from Friday is that the governor has a chance to make vetoes of any bills, and he has to return those vetoes to the legislature. We have a chance to come back a week from Friday to vote to override any vetoes that he might make. Now, in the past, it's been customary that the governor will notify the clerk and say, or notify the speaker and say, look, I'm not going to veto anything that from this past week. So if you want to adjourn sine die now, you can.
Okay.
And so I don't know that that's going to happen, but otherwise we will be adjourning sine die a week from Friday.
Sounds good. Have a good week. Enjoy the final few days, and we'll have a wrap-up week from today, okay?
Perfect.
All
right.
Thank you. Take care. That's Senator Mike Jacobson representing us here in western Nebraska.